There is only one reason for an alpha to miss one of her illustrious classes. Date night. An idea so obvious, the fact that I missed it and had to be reminded that dates exist was almost as mortifying as having her question me about my plans in front of every other alpha in the room. When I told her I wanted to take Remy to the most upscale, famous restaurant in town, Irene tutted, reaching up to adjust my tie the way a grandmother might mess with her grandson's hair.
"Now, now," she said, "where's the fun in that? Where's the personality? She's courting you, is she not? So show her you, Mr. Pearson."
Well, easier said than done. I changed the plans half a dozen times before they felt right, or rather felt like me. A concept I am much less familiar with than I'd like to admit. This morning, when I brought Remy her coffee, I also included a gift bag and instructions to open it when it was time for her to get ready. As soon as I get home from the office and finish changing, I find she's followed my instructions. My good fucking girl.
"Smith?" she calls through the half-open doors of her room. "Is this right?"
I look down at my own outfit, suddenly questioning the whole plan, especially the part where I wear shorts. I'm surprised I even had shorts, let alone the kind you wear for swimming or leisure. This pair is black and shorter than I would normally select. They're probably Damon's, actually. But at this point, I have to act like I did all of this on purpose, even in my own head. Striding to her door, I linger at the edge and all the air seeps out of my lungs. Fucking hell. Mistake. This was a mistake. Clearly. How on earth did I imagine I could be any sort of gentleman while she's wearing that? I picked the bikini out myself, ducking into an upscale women's boutique between site visits earlier this week. On the model, the ice blue fabric seemed like a safe choice. I've seen her wear the pastel color before. I've forgotten how lovely it looks against her honey brown skin, though. And I definitely didn't consider how tempting I would find the long, curling straps tied into bows at her hips and across her bare back. God, but she's beautiful. The blue sets off her eyes. Her gold flecks stand out. The cornflower color pops brighter. Silky black hair cascades down her back in loose coils, brushing the feminine slope just above the small of her back. There are two dimples there, teasing, as she turns to frown at me. One elegant black brow arches. "We're going swimming?" I can't help but smile at her confusion, trying for a shrug. "If we want." Her hands go to her hips. "Well, is there a dress code where we're going?" We really are alike. Everything about her, the posture, the pout, the question itself, feels relatable to me. Because if someone told me we were going out and then handed me a swimsuit, I would also question their sanity. "Just throw on one of your more casual dresses," I tell her. "Sandals are fine too. Bring a spare change of clothes." She nods, instantly snapping into gear. It's an interesting combination. The way she's too smart not to ask questions or need to know the plan, but also submissive enough to accept that I have figured it out. While Remy disappears into her bathroom and the attached closet, I turn to find the door to her nest open for the first time since Cassian's rut. It was very dark then, and I was too focused on keeping myself and the others in check to properly look around. What I see now draws me across the room until I'm standing at the threshold staring in. I was supposed to do this with her. I didn't know it at the time. When Julian gave our small group a lesson nesting and nest etiquette, I felt sick. Part of me had hoped she wasn't finished with it yet, so I could help her at least a little bit. I should have known better, though. "Omega." Remy comes rushing out, her hands at the nape of her neck, securing a necklace that matches her new suit and the white sundress over it. Her eyes look wide and nervous as they dash between me and the nest. Is something wrong?
Control.
I'm barely keeping myself together.
Control, control, control.
Come here, I say, then remember myself. Please. She swallows visibly, her hands falling to her sides while she floats toward me. Stopping at my side, she peers into the nest and scans the room, searching for the source of my dismay. When she, apparently, finds everything the way she left it, she turns to me. Did I do something?
Perfect,
I interject, taking her delicate hands in mine. Remy, this nest is beautiful.
And so are you.
Especially when she beams up at me, her eyes lighting with happiness from my compliment.
You like it? I've had the idea for ages, but I wasn't sure.
We would take care of her in a rusty shed if we needed to, and I doubt any of us would care once her heat perfume kicked in. But this is beyond comfortable or sufficient. This is every bit as perfect as she is. The theme is clear. Sunrise on one side and sunset on the other. She even lined them up from east to west, a weak, buttery flare on the eastern wall of the round room and a bright orange disc sinking into the western wall's horizon. I touch one of her cheeks, bending to scent mark the other. It's lovely. Did you hire an artist to do the painting? I hate the thought of anyone outside our pack inside this sacred room, but she needs to have everything exactly the way she wants it. She shakes her head, though, and I feel relieved. Until she says,
I did the paint myself. For Cassian.
Because sunrise was their thing. She planned the theme of her dream nest based on those mornings they spent together. If I wasn't already painfully in love with her, I would be right this moment with this woman who loved Cass when I couldn't and kept him alive for me while I was trying to get our life back on track. You really are an angel, I rasp. And then I kiss her.
Chapter 51. Remy. I can still taste Smith, an hour later. Our kiss didn't last more than one brief second. A soft brush of his lips. One, sure, leisurely glide of his tongue along mine. While I was still in shock, he led me down to his Range Rover and told me to get comfortable. I found out why when he pulled onto the interstate, heading east. On our way, he asks me questions. Not inquiries. Things about the house, my plans, the pack. But actual personal questions that only seem aimed at getting to know me better. Ignoring the way my lips still tingle, I tell him about meeting Cassian, becoming friends with Meg, and what my job used to look like before his investment group purchased Proper Coffee. He asks thoughtful follow-up questions and some that just feel silly. Cats or dogs? Cats are obviously smarter and cleaner. Chocolate or vanilla? The correct answer is why choose? Favorite color? Seasonal? Food? He says croissants don't count and demands I name an actual meal, to which I begrudgingly admit I'm a sucker for really good pasta. Place? That last one stumps me a bit. I haven't really had the opportunity to travel much. The only excursions I ever went on were state-funded field trips to various Florida locales. While I explain, blushing from embarrassment at sounding so uncultured, Smith's warm palm finds my thigh, squeezing gently. You would love Paris, he muses. All the pastries and flower markets, Versailles, the art, great shopping, too. He smiles wryly, although Cassian would moan in every store, and Damon would bitch at every museum. I look down at his hand, the long fingers slowly stroking my skin. That one touch, this whole evening, feels like a gesture. I'm not sure when or why it started, but I've noticed things like this more and more. Sweetly nuzzling my face before he leaves in the morning, the way he's tempered his intensity to make his stares less intimidating and more steadying. He's really trying, and I want to try too. swallowing nerves, I try for an even tone. Maybe that could be a good trip for just the two of us. Smith turns his head, casting me a stunned look that quickly melts into the first true grin I've ever witnessed on his handsome face. It's a beautiful smile, warm and masculine, made even more genuine by the way his eyes crinkle. "That's an excellent idea," he praises. "I'd love to take you shopping there." I try for a completely innocent look. "Buy yourself some new pocket squares?" Smith's laughter might be the best sound I've ever heard. Every bit as alluring as his smile, but layered with joy and a note of surprise that makes me want to laugh, too. His phone is plugged into the Range Rover's center console, pumping out some horribly whiny alternative rock. When he sees me glance at the display, wincing, he chuckles again. "Here, little pedal. Pick whatever you like." The Smith Pearson is handing me his phone? It doesn't seem real. He's practically married to this thing. I don't think I've ever seen him without it on his person. Except maybe that one night. In his room. I take the iPhone, swiping it open and scrolling his Spotify. Unlike Cassian and Damon, who always shared their account and recently added me too, Smith has his own. Of course. The playlists feel like a whole lot of nothing. Smooth jazz, vague alternative, and something called mellow oldies. The sort of music someone puts on because they're trying not to listen too hard. Pulling a face, I abandon all of his saved songs and go hunting for new material. While I'm scrolling, a text alert pops up at the top of the screen. "Irene," the contact name says, along with one sentence. "Missing you tonight." I blink at the phone as the alert tucks itself into the top of the screen, as if nothing ever happened. Chapter 52. Remy.
Remy.
I barely hear my name. My mind spins through the last few weeks, clicking pieces together. He's unavailable from 5 until 8 most nights. At some sort of daily meeting he doesn't volunteer any information about, and when he turns up, I can sense that he's been around another Omega. What if my instincts weren't being psycho? Has he really been spending his evening with another Omega? Is that why he's never tried to get anything more than a kiss on the cheek from me before tonight? Is he getting everything he needs from someone else? Remy? I can't deny the alarm in his voice.
Are you all right?
My face feels like it's made of dry clay while I set the phone back in the center console. I'm... what? Surprised? Stupid? Heartbroken? He won't like any of those reactions. Am I supposed to just be okay with this? That's how a more sophisticated, worldly woman might react. It's not like he and I are sleeping together or having any sort of relationship among ourselves. This is our first date, technically. Maybe if I try really hard, I can sway him away from whoever Irene is.
Remy.
Smith's gruff, irritated voice matches the way he yanks his hand off my leg and scoops up his phone. Keeping one eye on the road, he glances at the stack of unopened alerts that cascade from the top of his screen when he pulls the tap down. I can see his gears turning, trying to figure out what I saw. The moment he realizes his mistake, his expression hardens. The hand gripping the wheel goes white-knuckled as he sets his phone back in between us. His posture tightens.
"Remy," he grunts. It isn't what you think."
I must still be in shock because even that lame line doesn't hit me the way it should. I blink at the side of his face, feeling my insides go cold. He flinches, cringing slightly. "Oh, right. My scent. It must be horribly burned by now." I'm shocked and a little offended that his isn't. Nothing like the first time we met as mates. At Forever Matched, anyway. This is more tingly, in a bad way. It makes my nose itch. Embarrassment, I realize. Not stress or anger or shame. He's just embarrassed by having a mistress? Is she even a mistress? I'm not really this Alpha's Omega. Maybe I'm the mistress. Smith guides the SUV off the road, slowing to a stop on the side of the highway and turning to face me completely. His low, even voice interrupts my spiral.
"Pedal. Try not to panic. Irene isn't a woman I'm seeing. She's my teacher."
I swear you could hear a pin drop inside my head right now. Empty silence echoes back at me, while that word swirls around. Teacher? For what? He clears his throat, which is his tell. He's telling the truth, but he doesn't like it.
After you moved in, I realized how little I knew about being the sort of alpha you deserved,
he says, quiet and gruff.
I decided I needed help.
Oh, my God. Images of the high and mighty Smith Pearson in his perfectly pressed suits, scowling over lessons on slick and nesting, leave me gaping. That's where you've been every night? I sound small and wobbly. Smith's scent deepens, growing darker. He instantly leans closer, gathering my hands in his, and sloughs out a deep breath.
Yes, the classes are intensive. The course only lasts a month, so Irene and Julian, the Omega instructors, insist on perfect attendance.
And here I thought he had avoided all of the family dinners I tried to make because he couldn't stand me, when really, I squeeze his hands. Smith, he purrs, leaning closer, his smooth, sexy voice dropping into a murmur.
Don't. I don't want you to thank me or think this means you owe me anything. You deserve alphas who know how to take care of you, who make you feel as cherished as you are. You owe me nothing for doing what I need to do to become that for you. But I owe you an apology for not being that alpha when we met.
I'm torn between smiling and tears. My eyes water while I smirk. Are you ever going to actually say you're sorry? A spark moves through his dark eyes. His sculpted mouth quirks in wry amusement.
Have I never said that out loud?
A giggle bubbles out of me. No. He grins, a quick, pure expression of delight. It fades as he looks down at our entwined fingers. With utter sincerity, he bends his face to my hands and kisses both of them. When he speaks, I can still feel the brush of his lips, his words a rumbling skitter across the thin skin of my wrists.
I'm sorry, Angel. I'm so sorry that I ever scared you or hurt you. I'll regret the way I treated you for as long as I live.
He means it. With every tiny piece of himself, I can feel it. And as I sit there in his luxurious leather car, watching him literally bow to me, this isn't what I want. Smith, I cut my palms over his stubbled jaw, lifting his face back to mine. I don't want you to live with that sort of regret. I want you to be happy. That's all it really is, isn't it? All my perfectionism and my constant desire to please him, I want him to be happy. With me. When I finally get the words out, he listens, more intent on what I'm saying than anyone ever has been. I watch his deep brown eyes bounce between mine, absorbing the words. When they crease in pain, I realize it's the good kind, the sort that makes your heart ache. He leans his forehead into mine for a long moment, letting the tension slip off his features.
There's something I need to show you.
Turns out that, even after discovering his deep, dark secret, Smith Pearson is still a mystery. When he turns off the interstate and begins driving us toward the ocean, I naturally assume we're going to the beach. Instead of heading for one of the public access points, though, the Range Rover cuts a sharp right onto a sandy residential street. With the sun nearly setting, tangerine light suffuses the coastal area. Slants of orangey gold slice through the narrow street's foliage. All the beachy sorts of plants make me smile. Sea grapes, bougainvillea, hibiscus bushes. It doesn't take long for me to see that the impressive landscaping along the street is hiding some pretty luxe houses, though. They all sit far from the lane, their backs to the ocean, fronts obscured by palm fronds and elephant ears. A nervous niggle starts in my stomach. Is Smith about to pull into one of these million-dollar homes and show me a whole new estate I have to become the mistress of in order to impress him? We do make one final turn into a crowded, unevenly paved driveway. I lean forward, looking out the windshield at the house in front of us, blinking my shock.
What?
It's the smallest house on the whole street. In fact, one could easily mistake it for the neighbor's pool house, or even a quaintly designed storage shed. It's neither, though. It's a bungalow. A tiny white bungalow, trimmed in garish turquoise paint and standing on sandalwood stilts. It has a worn roof and flaky window tint, and the front yard is a veritable jungle. But it's adorable. I'm instantly in love. What is this place? I buzz, beaming at the flamingo mailbox hanging beside the front door. Smith gives nothing away, coming around the car to open my door and help me step onto the white sand-covered concrete. While I drift toward the little place, he clears his throat and begins to ramble.
I thought we might stay here tonight. If you'd be open to it, I can order dinner, and there's a hot tub in the back. No pool, but there is beach access.
He must be a damn good developer because he's a terrible salesman. I bite down on a teasing grin and nod along, letting him give me all sorts of useless information. Now that I don't think of him as the terrifying alpha who intimidates me anymore, it's easier to find him cute when he babbles about square footage. Even when he's muttering on, he's still in command, leading me right up to the house using a keypad on the front door. My eyes trace over the sign hung above the doorframe, thinking that it's super ironic, for both Mr. Perfectionist and myself.
Don't make perfect the enemy of the good.
Damon would love that, and Cassian would say something akin to, duh. Smiling to myself, I follow Smith inside, seeing that this isn't a typical vacation rental. Unlike a furnished pad, it's empty, aside from a table and two chairs. The tiny home is one long living area, narrow but with a high A-frame and natural wood beams that stand out against the bright white beadboard covering the ceiling. There isn't much to it. A small living room area to the left of the entrance, a cased opening leading to a dining nook, and a tiny kitchen tucked off to the side. But the whole back wall of the house is a hodgepodge of windows, warped antique glass, seafoam stained panes, and some that are crystal clear. It doesn't really matter because the view is incredible. There's nothing fancy about it, just a clear, straight shot at the ocean. Pale sand, gray-blue water, and a hazy pink sky. I stand and stare at it from just inside the front door. Smith takes my hand, threading our fingers back together as he pulls me through the cased opening and into the small kitchen area. I see it has appliances, newer ones that don't match the worn round table and chairs at all. Ignoring the room, Smith guides us out one of the stained glass French doors and onto a back porch that's as wide as the kitchen itself. The house is totally out of balance, clearly designed by someone who just loved this view and the ocean so much that they didn't mind sacrificing half of their home's footprint to make room for an outdoor living space. The more I look out at the water, the less I can blame them for it. Who owns this? I ask, lifting my free hand to touch a set of shell wind chimes. I like their style. Smith waits for me to look back at him and his rueful half-smile.
It's mine.
My fingers twitch against his. Yours? The humor falls off his face. He turns to the ocean, sighing.
I bought it as an investment property 2 years ago. It's a prime piece of land, great street. Every other house here goes for anything north of $10 million, but this one...
His pensive expression draws me closer to him.
This one?
I prompt. His blonde brows furrow.
This one belonged to a very old man, an alpha who bought it back in the 80s for his Omega.
He swallows.
When she died, he lived here without her, refused to sell it to anyone even though he got offers for more than $5 million. He said no, got a reputation for turning down any developer who darkened his doorway, and not being very polite about it either.
A slight smile touches his mouth, but not his eyes.
I thought I was hot shit back then. We just made our first, well, a lot of money. And I wanted a beach house, for the pack, our future family, whatever. So I came here, determined to tell the old bastard anything he wanted to hear. I told him we had an Omega who loved the beach. I told him we wanted to have kids and bring them here to play. And I swore up and down that I wouldn't tear the place to the ground the first chance I got.
He glances at me, a familiar darkness in his gaze,
knowing that's exactly what I would actually do.
My heart squeezes, aching for the alpha who missed his lost love and couldn't stand the thought of letting her home be dismantled. I am almost afraid to ask.
Did he sell it to you?
Smith nods slowly.
I was very convincing.
My stomach sinks, along with the bubble of hope that had risen in my chest.
So this house... You want to tear it down?
He gives a hard, breathless laugh, the sound rueful.
I can't tear it down, he huffs. I've hired the crew and called it off a dozen times. Every time I try, I just...
He shakes his head, looking back out at the view and murmuring, I can't do it. There was a time when I would have told you I could never, ever love this Alpha. But right now, I think I really could. Especially when he turns his dark eyes back on me, saying so many things without words. This is personal, I realize. A real true piece of Smith. No polish or shine or pretense or power. This forlorn place, with its beautiful story of love that's been lost to the tides of time, this is the sort of thing he carries around with him, hidden under all his expensive suits, inside his heart. Why did you bring me here? I whisper, needing to hear him say it. What did you want me to see? He releases another breath, glancing fondly at the charming little house. That Alpha? I hated him, and it took me months to figure out that I was jealous of this lonely, angry old widower, because he had a real partner, someone he made decisions with, like another half. And the more I planned to tear down everything they built together, the more I realized what I really wanted. It wasn't the property or the money or any of that shit. It was his life, a pack, a partner, a mate. I remember wondering why a man like Smith had ever submitted an application to Forever Matched in the first place. He seemed so solitary. What would he want with an Omega? This. He wanted a connection, a partner. You wanted me to see you, I realize out loud, whispering. He cups his hands around my face, strumming his thumb over my lower lip. I wanted you to see me, and when I tried to think of a place that felt like me, this was it. I glance over at the house, feeling its magic soak into my center with every pull of salty ocean air. When I look back up at Smith, for the first time, it isn't hard to tell him the truth. I love it.
Chapter 53. Damon. Do you want to talk about it? Our Uber driver is a beta guy a little younger than us. He glances up in the rearview mirror when he hears Cassian's question, and quickly looks away when he catches my packmate's scowl. I stare out at the bleak gray evening in whatever godforsaken corner of Minnesota we're currently driving through, or maybe it's Michigan. Hard for me to remember when we've been on the road for 9 days and all the hotel rooms look the same. This is ironic. A few months ago, any interest in my well-being from Cassian would have been a welcome change of pace. Now, though, I don't know if I want us to talk. Nausea coils in my middle while I clutch a stack of unreadable paperwork in my left fist. Every time I try to look at it, the letters rearrange themselves into symbols I don't recognize. I don't know what it says. But I know what it means, and so does Cass. He read the damn thing in 10 seconds, of course, right over my shoulder, the same moment Coach sheepishly handed it to me. I didn't get much from the fight that came after that, except that Cass is upset, and Coach feels shitty about what's happening, though not enough to stop it, apparently. Can't believe this, Cass mutters, letting his head bounce against the seat behind us before jamming his fingers into his hair. It's still sweaty. Neither of us showered after this last game because Coach approached me with these stupid papers as soon as we came off the ice. He didn't need to. When they pulled me out to put Gunnar in sometime during the middle of the third period, I already knew what was happening. The press has been on about it for months. I stupidly believed it was all clickbait bullshit. Maybe I should have paid closer attention, or worked out harder, or watched my penalties more. Either way, the writing is on the wall here. I'm being replaced. This is important, I coach internally, glancing at the paperwork. You can do this. Just read the first line so you know what it says. Narrowing my gaze, I focus on the jumble of characters I know must really be words. Some of them are clusters I've memorized. I see my full name first. That feels like a bad sign. This is a legal document. There are some numbers, which probably form a date of some sort. The rest are small words like on and for. The stuff in between is gibberish to me. Fuck. 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 What do I do? Do I tell Cassian I literally can't read this? I've avoided telling anyone for 15 years. Ever since I told my father and he started calling me dipshit instead of Damon. I wonder if Remy has put it together yet. She's so smart it wouldn't surprise me. Although I'm sure if she had, she would treat me differently, at least a little bit. There have only been a handful of people who noticed my deficiency, but every single one of them definitely lost some respect for me after they knew. I wonder how bad it will be whenever Remy finally realizes. I actually can't think about it too hard or my lungs stop working. We go over a pothole, jostling the car, and Cass cuts me a sideways look. What does the rest of the paperwork say? I only looked at the first page. Oh, God, this isn't working. I snap my eyes closed and hunch over my lap, thrusting the papers over to my packmate. Here, I can't, just tell me what they say. There's a long beat of silence before he takes the document, and another one after he shuffles the papers around. It's actually not as bad as I thought, he murmurs. Nothing is decided. They've put your contract in review pending the playoffs. My mind spins, and I realize it's because I'm not breathing. When I force myself to inhale, it all makes sense in the worst fucking way. They have Gunner. He can do what I do, almost as well, for a lot less money. If they sever my contract, I'll be on a different team in another state, or I'll be nothing at all. I doubt Remy will want to be bonded to an alpha who can't be with her for any of her heats, or any of the other shit. Good days, bad days, anniversaries, birthdays. An image of her blue-gold eyes, shining with tears while she described years of hating her birthday, looms in my head. I have a whole plan to make sure she never spends the day feeling alone again. What if I won't even be there? That can never happen. I promised her she wouldn't be alone anymore. I swore we would take care of her together. Frantic, the wheels in my head spin faster, trying to churn up some sort of solution. I could quit, stop playing hockey and stay home, and what? Without this career, I'll have none at all. It's not like I can do anything else. I can't even read the damn paperwork telling me I have to do something else. And I can't leave Remy. I won't. So basically, I have to crush the playoffs, or walk away and show everyone what a disappointment I really am. A low wave of fury rolls off Cass. Some warning would have been nice, and giving you this shit on the road? Jesus. He has a point. It was a dick move to wait until we finished our road series to tell me. Strategic, but shitty. I won most of these games, with a little help from Gunner. That's not to say the rookie couldn't have pulled it off, but that's not the point. They used me knowing they were going to put me through this. My throat is sticky as I force a swallow. What can I do? Cassian flips through the pages, scanning them with his lightning-quick gaze. Smith will have to call the lawyers, but we've all discussed this. We knew they had this option. That's true. I knew there was a chance my contract might not get renewed, but I never let myself think about it much. I'm usually the lucky one, remember? I told myself I would work it out when I had to, never expecting it to actually happen, just like I never expected I'd be completely all in love with an Omega who needs me to be worth a damn. I scrub my hands over my eyes, but I can't feel them. Are they numb, or is it my face? Cassian takes a long look at me and hesitates before setting his hand on my shoulder. When I can't seem to make myself blink, he grumbles, "Listen. There's a chance. If you play well enough in the playoffs, they'll drop this whole thing. They haven't released you yet. This is just notice that you're in review. If you post enough points in the playoffs and we actually win, they'll have to renew your contract." I finally raise my head, meeting his heavy stare. "And if they don't?" A wince pulls at his features. "It will suck, but we can get past it. We can get you a job at Pearson Properties, or... I mean, you wouldn't want to keep playing, right? If it meant moving away from..." I watch him choose his next word carefully. When he finally settles on it, the pain in my chest pulses. "Us?" Because it isn't just Remy. She's the biggest part now, but I'd also have to leave Cass, too. My brother, basically. And his brother, who's more like the only family I've ever had.
Could I walk away from all of them? If I don't, I'll be a washed-up former athlete. Hockey is all I've ever been. If I leave it behind, what do I have left for Remy? I look back at the rumpled paperwork piled between us. I think I need your help, Cass.
Chapter 54. Remy. I'd forgotten all about Smith being a contractor in his former life, until we had to figure out how to turn on the hot tub. He seemed to snap into a version of himself I'd never seen before, stripping his shirt off and getting on his back to access a panel of controls tucked under the railing on the deck. Within 30 minutes, we had a perfect whirlpool and the most delicious Italian takeout I've ever eaten. It's clearly from an upscale restaurant, but Smith takes the time to unload everything onto the only two plates in the whole house, arranging my pasta on a turquoise plate with seashells around the rim. When I smile at the dinnerware, he smirks ruefully.
You'll need to put your skills to good use around here, Angel. Aside from the table, there's just a nightstand and a bed.
My brows draw up. One bed? He pulls the cork out of a bottle of champagne, the single item I found in the refrigerator, and meets my eyes steadily.
One bed.
Does that mean he finally feels like I'm ready for whatever he wants to do to me? Or maybe he's planning to take me home and tuck me into my own bed, alone. It seems unlikely we're going anywhere when he pulls a second bottle out of the to-go bags and places it in the fridge to chill for later. The hot tub is a luxury I've never experienced before. While Smith wades right in, arranging our dinner on a wide wooden ledge built around the lip of the bubbling pool, I linger at the edge, dipping my toe in. It is hot.
Whoa.
When Smith notices my hesitation, he leaves our plates behind and comes over, holding out his hand.
It's okay,
he murmurs, eyes soft and dark in the waning sunset.
It feels really good once you're in. Trust me?
I do. So much more now than I did even a few hours ago. When I slip my fingers into his, something hot and bright flares in his gaze. He wraps his free arm around my waist and lifts me right in. The water is sweltering, for a moment, but as soon as I'm in it, the heat melts my apprehension into a puddle. Smith watches me relax, his approval clear, even before he slides his hands over my back and murmurs,
"Good girl, always so brave for me. And so fucking beautiful."
He bends as he roughs out the last few words, scent marking my forehead with his. When I can't quite strangle the wine that ekes out of me, he hums and pulls me closer, gliding backward through the water and landing on the bench seat with me in his lap.
"This okay?"
he asks, reaching for my plate.
"I want to feed you."
Every coherent thought flies out of my head.
Yes. If you want.
His smile is no less handsome up close, a sexy quirk of his lips that's somehow wry and genuine, and oh Lord, is there a tiny dimple in his left cheek when he smirks like this? I've never been close enough to notice before. Now, sitting across the spread of his muscled thighs, it's impossible to look away. He angles us perfectly, bringing bites of tortellini right to my mouth. The creamy mushroom sauce he ordered is incredible. I hum happily and he chuckles.
Right? I love this place. We don't have one in town, though. You have to drive out here to get it.
I swallow and let myself cuddle a little bit closer to him.
Maybe we can bring the guys next time. All of us could have a family dinner there.
Easy affection curves his mouth.
You and your family dinners.
I try not to let tension creep into my posture, recalling all the times I made a big meal only to leave his plate untouched. But Smith is watching me now. He sees the way I freeze up and makes a low noise of apology, nuzzling my cheek again.
I'm sorry, Petal.
No qualifiers or explanations, just honest remorse.
So sorry,
he repeats.
Let's choose a night every week, and I swear I'll be there. In fact, I'll come home early and help you cook.
My belly quivers with nerves. I know he's trying to show me that what I want matters to him, but part of me still feels like I should explain why I'm like this. I accept the next bite of food from his fork, chewing before I sigh and whisper,
I've never had a family dinner before.
He goes still, leaving the utensil on my plate and staring at me for an eternity, The gears in his mind grind as he processes my mortifying confession. When he finally understands, his arms lock around me in a hug to rival his brother's crushing embraces. "Fucking hell," he breathes. "I'm such an asshole, Remy, Angel, Jesus, I'm so sorry, I didn't think..." "Never? Not one time?" I go back through all the foster homes I went to. There were meals at family tables, usually served in an assembly line fashion, grease-stained bags of fast food, lots of soggy French fries, but never a time when I felt like I was gathered at a table with my family. "No," I confirm. "Not one time." Smith exhales hard, ruffling my hair. His voice sounds hoarse. "I'll never miss another one, Petal. I swear. Please forgive me. I'm so sorry." I do forgive him, as much as I can. The hurt is still there, aching like a bruise on my heart. But when he buries his face into my shoulder and scent marks my throat, I feel the pain start to evaporate. A rolling rumble revs in his chest. His purr is just as perfect as I remember, smooth and soothing, all the way down to my soul. "Come here, Angel," he husks, gently turning me so I'm sprawling on his lap, my back pressed to his chest and my head resting on the broad ledge of his shoulder. His forearm hooks around my waist, comforting in the weightlessness of the water. He keeps feeding me bites of delicious food, brushing his lips over my temple every few moments. The periwinkle sky fades to violet before he musters his will and speaks again. "I've made a lot of mistakes. Sometimes I wonder if you'd still want me for your alpha if you knew all of them." It's another piece of him, one that hits me right in the gut. "You could tell me," I whisper, "and then you'll know." His arm cinches tighter. "It's a long list, little Petal." Finished with my dinner, I turn and mark his neck with a kiss. "Okay, what's the worst thing?" A shaking breath escapes him. He hangs his head forward, pressing our foreheads back together. "I failed, Cassian. That has to be the worst thing." I reel back, my face crumpling. "What? How? You've done incredibly well." His answering smile is hollow. "That's now. At first, fuck, everything was a mess. I wasn't 18 yet, so we had to go into the foster care system. When I turned 18, I tried to get him back. He was so... I know you didn't meet him until later, but at the time he was only 9, and he was scared. I wanted to raise him myself, but I had no job, no degree, shit grades because I spent all of my time fucking around, not knowing our parents wouldn't be around." He shakes his head. "It took me way longer to get myself together than it should have. By then, he was practically a grown man." I touch his cheek, feeling the prickle of his 5 o'clock shadow. "Why did it take you so long?" "It was just..." He makes a half-groan sound. "Fuck, I don't know. I wanted us to have money and a nice place to live. So I just kept working more and more, trying to achieve enough to feel ready. But it never happened." I remember the charming sign on the front porch and how ironic it seemed. "You made perfect the enemy of the good." His expression flickers, pain creasing his brow. "I do that." Just like he did with their house. And my suite. Because he cares. So much, too much, like I do, and it paralyzes him, the same way it sends me into a tizzy. "Me too," I tell him, leaning closer. "Maybe we could help each other stop." I almost laugh. "Or maybe Cass could help us. He's good that way." "Damon is too," Smith grumbles, "except when it comes to his hair products." Indignance surges through me. I slap the water, sending a splash at his chest. "Hey, that's my alpha. And he's actually a lot wiser about a lot of things than either of you give him credit for. He was the first one to actually try to get to know me and do the things I enjoy. And he's smart, Smith. Think about all the scrapes he's gotten himself out of. Think about where he started and where he is now. He did that, all on his own." Instead of blinking at me, Smith listens, brow furrowed in concentration. When I finish, he nods. "I agree, actually. I keep asking him if he wants to help me out with Pearson, but every time I mention it, he acts like I've asked him to feed his balls to a den of lions." I didn't know about Pearson. That mollifies me somewhat, though I wonder if it has something to do with the way he struggles to read basic household things, like our calendar or the notes I leave for them.
Sometimes, Smith mutters, reaching over to take the last bite of his steak. I wonder if Damon is onto something, avoiding the business like he does. I always assumed Smith loved what he did. Otherwise, what was the point of him being there so much? He has clearly made more money than we will ever need. If you don't like it, why do you do it? Smith spreads his arms out, snatching a glass of champagne for me in one hand and picking up his own in the other. After a couple of swallows, he sighs. I used to like it. Lately, though, I don't know. I'm always taking things apart, leveling people's memories into dust and painting over them. And yes, we build things. But do we really make anything good? I'm just not sure anymore. I think about proper coffee, how it technically looks and does better now, but it lost all of its character and softness along the way. Have you ever thought about doing something else? I wonder out loud. He cocks his head to the side, regarding the dark horizon pensively. I don't think I've let myself think about that in a long time. Maybe I should. I'm about to agree, shifting to pick up the bottle of sparkling wine and refill his glass, but my body has other ideas. As soon as I rise up onto my knees, one of the hot tub's jets strokes across my bare stomach, the pulse of the heated water making me gasp. Smith's lips quirk up, his eyes darkening for completely different reasons than they were a moment before. Stretch up a bit more. He doesn't ask, but it isn't a command either, more a sensual suggestion. The knowing gleam in his eyes makes me want to listen to him. This is clearly a man who knows what he's talking about, much more than I do. I bring my knees closer and lengthen my lower back. The pounding sensation goes from hitting just below my navel to vibrating at the apex of my thighs. I gasp again, rearing back. Smith's hand is there, though, keeping me from falling into the water. His body presses into my side while his warm palm strokes a soothing line over my spine. It's okay, he murmurs, kissing my shoulder. Give yourself a moment to adjust. A small beat of alpha power accompanies his words. Not enough to be forceful, just enough to make me feel like he's in control. It's reassuring. I don't want to be the one making these decisions. I love that he likes to take over and let me relax. My muscles unwind as he steps up behind me. His hands find my hips, stroking soothing circles as he tilts them the way he wants them. His voice sends shivers down my back. Spread your legs. Goosebumps skitter over my skin, leaving my nipples painfully hard under the triangles of wet, clingy fabric covering them. As if he can read my mind, one of Smith's hands presses flat to my stomach before sliding up. He pauses at the lower edge of my bikini top, his thumb stroking the straining tip. A charge zips straight to my clit. For a second, his touch is all I can feel, all the more powerful for being the only stimulation. When he bends his knee and uses his thigh to push mine apart, the pulsing jet suddenly hits right where my body throbs the hardest. Hot sensation shoots through all of my limbs, the pleasure almost overwhelming. There you go, he murmurs, gentling me as I squirm and whine. His fingers pinch my nipple until my head falls back onto his shoulder. He nuzzles my temple, his voice growing rougher while his words grow sweeter. Beautiful angel, seeing you like this is such a gift. Do you know that? How precious you are. The hand at my hip sketches lower, his blunt nails digging into my upper thigh while the jet pulses against my pussy. I buck backward. His hard length presses into my back. Smith hums, ghosting his lips over the curve of my neck. So beautiful, he praises. I can't tell you how many times I thought about biting this pretty neck petal. Too many fucking times. The sensation of the water hitting me is so intense, more than anything else I've ever felt before. Smith's fingers slip closer, flexing as he grips the flesh of my thigh, his knuckles brushing the edge of my bikini bottoms. Do you want them off? He asks. I'll fill this sweet cunt with my fingers right now. I gasp again, my backside grinding into his solid length. That's a rude word. I pant. I don't. A whimper breaks into my scolding. I like it. Smith's chuckle is as warm as the hot water beating at my clit. All right, Angel. Noted. I think you'll like this, though. The hand at my breast moves to tease my neglected nipple while he dips his fingers into the bottoms, slipping two right into me. It's clear,
Even with all this hot water swirling around, I am soaked with slick. Smith groans roughly, the sound vibrating against the bare skin of my throat.
So tight and slick for me. Good girl, Remy, so good for me.
I was right before. This alpha knows exactly what he's doing. His long, thick fingers press forward and stroke deeper, finding the place made for his knot and massaging the clenching ring of muscle until my vision begins to blur.
My knot's going to feel so good in this tight pussy pedal. I'll stretch you just right, let you come all over me until you can't take it anymore.
His teeth graze the thin skin below my ear, his voice a gravelly rasp.
And then you'll give me one more anyway.
While his middle and forefinger work inside me, his thumb flicks the flimsy fabric covering me aside and spreads my lower lips, sending the jet of overheated water right onto my clit. The hot pulse instantly sets off my climax. Keening, I bear down on his hand and let my body clamp around his touch, feeling so many different types of pleasure at once. His fingers rubbing the place that pounds for his knot, the stream of liquid heat caressing my clit. His hand roughly clasping my breast, still thumbing my nipple as his teeth close around my throat. Bubbles erupt in my veins, as hot as the one swirling through the tub, more sparkly than the effervescence in our champagne. Smith growls his approval, telling me how perfect I look and feel while I come for him. And maybe, just maybe, I believe him.
Chapter 55. Smith. Caring for Remy is so much more than I ever expected it to be. I know who I am. I know what I like. And, to an extent, both of those things have always made me the more dominant, generous party in my past relationships. But this feels entirely different. It isn't just about how much control I can exert, how many orgasms I can pull out of her. This is everything I've ever wanted but never found. It's a gift. Every time she lets me work her over, takes the pleasure I insist on, submits to my control. She isn't taking, she's giving. Her trust, her body, her pleasure. It's all an incredible, indescribable gift that I surely don't deserve. I'm taking it anyway. I'm taking everything she'll give me and giving her everything I've got in return. That's how this is going to go from now on, I decide, bundling her into a towel. She's dazed and languid, blinking up at me with soft blue-gold eyes. I lead her into the house, pausing beside the back door to shuck my wet swim trunks while pinning my own towel around my hips with my fist. Remy follows my lead, removing the scraps of material she had on during the first four orgasms I gave her, knowing she's entirely naked under her beach towel, leaves my mouth watering as we step into the quiet, cozy house. Even before tonight, I had a soft spot for this place, but now I'm never going to be able to tear it down or sell it to someone who will. Now it's ours. Remy floats into the middle of the empty living space and turns back to me. Her head tilts in a coy gesture, but her eyes lower demurely. It's a tease. She has a bit of brat in her, topping from the bottom, but doing it so beautifully, she knows none of us will deny her. That's especially true when she drops her towel. Motherfucking hell. She's so goddamn gorgeous. Her makeup has melted off, but I love that she's bare for me, exposed in every way. Flawless brown skin over petite curves and fine bones. Her pert tits, the dusky nipples pointing slightly upward. The sweep of her feminine hips, the sweet glistening folds peeking from between her luscious thighs. She must be overstimulated by now. I pulled every last bit of pleasure I could get out of her, absorbing the way she let me have everything each time she fell over the edge. This was never about me, though. Tonight is meant to show her how I want it to be between us, how she'll be the center of my entire world, mine in every way, if she'll have me. I didn't expect anything more than that. So when she holds out her hand, it takes me a minute to understand what she's offering. More. She wants to give me more. It feels impossible, but the longer I hesitate, the more her face seems torn between desire and doubt. The fear of rejection flashes through her features, so easy to read, now that I recognize it. My towel hits the floor. I come right at her, my hands gripping her naked ass under the nape of her neck to lift her into my charge. I sweep her right up into me, binding her mouth with my own as I stalk to the bedroom. I want her so badly. My cock has long gone numb from the constant throb pulsing through it. It bobs heavily, grazing the wet heat bathing her upper thighs, the feeling sending a tingle through the straining length. A fresh burst of perfume flows from her body, hitting me in a dizzy rush. I couldn't scent her arousal in the hot tub, and it warms some deep, secret part of me to know how much I wanted her, even without that element in play. Fuck science. This isn't just about being scent matched anymore. It isn't about being mates. It's us, Remy and Smith, and she's so much more than some thing I can't resist. She's an angel, a temptress, a brilliant little brat who gets away with everything because she knows exactly how to act like a perfect lady. And I love her. The feeling pours through me, stronger and truer than anything I've ever felt. So sharp and sweet, it almost hurts. I grunt into her mouth, our tongues twisting around the agonized sound. She whines, reacting to all my emotion with her own, giving, still giving, more and more, as she throws her head back and lets me nestle into her throat, marking it with love bites since I can't have the real thing. Yet, it's still possible she won't ever want me that way. I don't care. She can have anything. If she wants me to suffer without her bond for the rest of my life to make up for the way I treated her, I will do it. And if she wants to form bonds with Cassian and Damon and leave me out as a punishment, I have to accept that, as long as she lets me have her. I'll survive. Our wet lips slip together in a filthy fucking sort of kiss. When she nips at my mouth, I snarl, my dominance erupting in a wave I can't control. You want me to fuck you, Omega? She nods, whimpering. Yes, sir. Another pulse of power infuses my reply. Present. Remy rolls out of my arms and onto the mattress, immediately situating herself on her hands and knees. The thin light from the room's single lamp glows off her shimmery, honey skin. The globes of her ass are enough to have me gripping my knot, needing it to relieve the pulsing ache there. Lower, I urge, wanting to see her entire slit. On your forearms. An unpleasant tremble racks her body. When I note the way she hesitates before moving to obey, I snap out, "Stop!" She freezes instantly. I smooth both palms over her ass, soothing her quivers. There's something about this that scares her. "Tell me," I murmur. Remy shakes slightly.
The heat clinic. They have Omegas on their forearms for their whole heat, presenting through a box.
She means a cage. They aren't boxes. They are metal cages. I've seen how those places are set up. After buying a few to dismantle them, I can easily imagine how uncomfortable that would be for her. Picturing her bent in half for 4 days fills me with rage and a thick wash of self-loathing. Why wasn't I there for her? I'll never forgive myself for the fact that she had to resort to that or the dubious meds Omegas have to take to suppress their heats. The guys already assured Remy she could stop taking hers. This will be her first heat without them, and her Omega will definitely want to present for us. There's no rush, though, especially not tonight. Before I can move her into another position, she decisively pushes her forearms flat to the bed, raising her ass higher. I want to be able to do this, she murmurs, quiet but strong. This is important to me. Can we try? Sweet little petal. Of course we can try, I tell her. Pick a safe word first. She considers this for a second, turning to press her face into the sheets, hiding half of the impish smirk twisting her pink lips. Latte. Damn. Fair enough. Good choice, I chuckle, my voice rasping. Say that if you need me to stop. Otherwise, we'll keep going. Her lips twitch up again. Yes, sir. Good girl, I praise, running my hands over her body with more intent. So fucking good. Are you going to take this knob? Make me your alpha. She nods, her damp curls bouncing against her nape. Yes, sir. Fuck, she's so perfect. You look exquisite, I tell her, kneeling up on the bed behind her, presenting for your alpha. You're doing so well, Angel. I'm so proud of you. Another wash of perfume fills the air with honeyed warmth. The taste of it is enough to make me half feral. My voice turns to a growl as I rub my cock between her spread thighs, coating myself in her sweet slick. God damn it. She already feels too good. Her heat bathes my dick as I slide myself back and forth, using my crown to tease her overworked clit slightly. She mules, pushing her hips back into my hands. Her eagerness makes me smile, and I let it show, knowing she won't see. Impatient, I tut. I'll have to work on that. My perfect little petal sweeps her lashes over her eyes. Textbook submission. So flawless, my blood smolders in my veins. Yes, sir. I take one last moment to admire her, stroking up her spine to nestle my fingers in her silky, kink-curled hair, wrapping it around my fist without pulling. She responds to the position exactly as I hoped. Her back expands on faster breaths, a fresh dribble of her honey wetting my cock. When I push the head of my dick into her, my vision momentarily dips. Her walls cinch around the wide crown, a rough curse sloughs out of me. Remy's wine is soft, but soaked in need. My body responds automatically, bucking to fill her slick, tender pussy with steel heat. Fuck me. My control is usually absolute. But once I'm inside her, I can't even see it anymore. Don't want to. She's already submitted. She's here, laid out. Mine. Now I'm going to make sure she fucking stays here. With every thrust, I feel us growing closer to each other. She spreads wider for me, relaxing into her pose. I move with an undercurrent of tenderness, wanting to erase any traumatic memories she might have, replacing them with how much I love her. I roll my hips, creating a rhythm she can take without rousing, showing her, with every pulse of my body moving into hers, that she can trust me. I won't ever let this hurt her again. The hand in her hair pulls softly, turning her face so I can watch pleasure glaze her features. My free hand touches her everywhere, memorizing the way she feels under my fingertips, warm, vibrant, and soft. My petal, an angel who fell into my bed. I'll never deserve her, but I can make her feel the way she deserves to feel. The thought renews my determination. I drill into her, pressing down and forward so every thrust grinds my knot against her clit. Her pussy pulls me in deeper, the clenches of her core drawing us closer and closer. I feel it coming half a second before it happens. Her body accepts mine all at once, the outer muscles relaxing while the ones deep inside tug me in, popping my knot into her. Ecstasy explodes through my base, snapping up my spine. The way she feels is a fucking miracle. Smooth, slick, hot, tight, and everywhere. I look down, nearly coming the second I see the way I disappear completely into her perfect pussy. Growling, I rut as smoothly as I can while we're partially locked down. Fucking hell, Angel. This pussy was made for my cock, my knot. You feel so good. I'm going to come so hard inside you, I'll never be able to leave. She cries out, the sound strangled and almost plaintive. I replay what I just said, barely coherent, but able to hear the part that might have hit her particularly hard. Churning my hips against her ass, I bend over her body to murmur into her hair. I'm never leaving, I pant. I'm never leaving you, Angel. Never, never, never. Remy sobs as she comes, the deep, throbbing clench of her core milking my cock until I glaze her depths with my cum. My knot expands, sealing us together, setting off another climax for both of us. My little petal trembles as I gather her up and arrange us on the bed's only pillow, tucking her into me. I bury my face into her neck and stroke my hands over her skin, murmuring my promises to her over and over until she falls asleep. Chapter 56. Sad Sausage Fest Chat. Smith, if either of you are late, I'll have your balls. Cassian, I'm on my way. I had to get some special wine Remy asked me to pick up. Damon, coming home now. I have flowers for our pretty girl. Cassian, fuck, I got Rem's flowers. Smith, I had some delivered this morning. Damon, if the card said petals for my petal, I'm never going to stop laughing. By the way, did anyone buy a vase? Smith, fuck. Cassian, fuck. Damon, on it. But that's totally what the card said, didn't it? Cassian, watching my big brother with Remy is really fucking annoying. And cute, I guess. If you're into that sort of thing. In a turn of events that's shocking to no one, they work perfectly together. Smith may not be a chef, but he's every bit as scrupulous as Remy is. When she gives him a direction, he follows it to the letter, moving around the kitchen like he's there with her every night. I'm in his usual place at the kitchen table, feeling a weird sense of role reversal when he steps up behind her and wraps an arm around her waist.